Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in America that's about to perform free therapy here on the air. Jordan, we're going to let you let it all out.
We promised you that when the postseason dictated it, we would get behind the microphone and deliver you our takes, our feelings, our reactions. And I will say that we were planning all along to get on the mic here late on Tuesday evening to react to Four Game Tuesday, right? This might be the last day of the postseason where we get four games. But boy, do we have some stuff to talk about, and we will obviously be getting to that. But again, we want to be transparent. Jake, let's set the stage. We are recording shortly before midnight on Tuesday night. We wanted to make sure we reacted to Four Game Tuesday, because this is just one of the more fun days of the season, of the postseason. And Jake, where are you right now? Because I'm still sitting at the desk that I normally am in my house in Richmond, Indiana.
You don't move. Yeah. I move. I'm a mover. I'm a shaker. And I am at Yankee Stadium behind section 224, recording this podcast as I gaze over an empty, trash-strewn Yankee Stadium that hours ago was rocking. Okay. Talking about baseball stadiums being loud and their various types of loudness is usually stupid. But Yankee Stadium, and honestly, Houston is also like dumb loud. That's real stuff. But we are not going to begin here at Yankee Stadium. We are going to begin not with the first game of the day in Atlanta, but we are going to begin with the main event. The reason you are all listening, to either commiserate or wallow alongside Jordan Schusterman's immense sadness and pain, because today the Seattle Mariners did not win a baseball game. They came about as close as you can to doing that without actually doing it, as the Houston Astros emerged victorious 8-7 on a three-run walk-off home run by Yordan Alvarez. And Jordan, as I mentioned before, this will be free therapy. So let me ask you, how did that make you feel?
Well, I tweeted a video of my live reaction, and that is a real live reaction. Anyone doubting that that is not a real thing. And I tweeted this too. As soon as Robbie Ray came in the game, and we'll rewind a little bit here in a second, I was like, well, this is going to be something. I don't know what it's going to be, but it is certainly going to be something. And we ended up on about as far into one end of the spectrum of what it could be as you could possibly imagine. So, Jake, I'm going to break this into five sections. All right.
Five
sections. Listen, we're not going an hour long. This is how I've started to formulate this. Okay. This is how we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the game before the homer, right?
Are the five sections, are they denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance?
Well, no.
These are the five stages of grief.
Listen, Jake, I am a professional podcaster. I have not just set this up for my own therapy. This is for you too. This is for your, I do want your insight and input for this too. Okay. So first we need to talk about the game. Okay. Then we are going to talk about the decision to put Robbie Ray into the game. Okay.
Great.
Then we are going to talk about the decision to pitch baseballs on purpose to Yordan Alvarez. All right.
Yes.
Then we are going to talk about the decision to throw the pitches that Robbie Ray threw to Yordan Alvarez. And then we are going to talk about the aftermath. So let's talk about the baseball game, because I don't know how much you got to watch the rest of the game. I assume you tuned in late when it was getting close. But let's start at the beginning. They kicked Justin Verlander's ass, and the Mariners offense was just bringing it to him. And it was pretty impressive to watch. Everyone in the lineup, I believe, had a hit except for Carlos Santana, which is weird because Carlos Santana has faced Justin Verlander like 5,000 times and has 9 homers against him in his career. But everyone was raking. France was raking. Julio was making shit happen, right? Later, we get a Suarez homer. You know, we get a Raleigh big hit. Kelnick has 2 hits. They're cruising, right? Logan Gilbert.
Worst outing. In the postseason of Justin Verlander's career, he had never allowed 10 hits in a postseason start, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was the second shortest postseason start of his career. The other one was, I believe, just 3 2/3. He was bad. He was just straight up bad. The Mariners knocked him around. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, Logan Gilbert was it's cruising, baby.
Yeah, he was really good, and he got into some trouble here and there. And I honestly, you know, because I took me a while to process the ending, like I didn't even process the fact that, you know, they pulled him at 84 pitches and he was still pitching pretty well. He hadn't thrown in 10 days. He hadn't pitched since the clincher, right? Because the way that the end of their regular season ended, they didn't need him at the end there. And then, of course, he didn't have to throw game three in Toronto. So he was very fresh, but, you know, it's the postseason and you don't necessarily want to push it too far. And you do have a good bullpen, right? Well, maybe not. We'll get to that. But the thing is that the reality of this game is it was not maybe this is not stupid. You're saying, Jordan, you're an idiot. It never felt like they had it, right? They were playing really well. They got out of some jams, but a four-run lead against one of the best offenses we've seen in however many years, like it's just not that good, right? It's not as comfortable as it is. And when Bregman homers in the eighth off Munoz and makes it a two-run game, and you're looking at the lineup, and sure, it's the bottom of the lineup, you're saying, all right, well, if it gets back to the top, this is going to be horrifying. Like, Seawald, very simple.
Okay, so great point. Seawald comes in for the ninth, and it's 8-9-1. And this is when I kind of really locked in. And I'm thinking, you can't face Altuve at the top with a guy on, right? Yes. You need to get these first two hitters. He gets the first hitter, who I believe was Christian Vasquez.
So Vasquez rounds out.
Then he plunks. Then he plunks the nine-hole guy.
So this was really the key moment of the game. Shouts out to Franklin Mirabal.
Key moment of the game.
David Hensley, who you have never heard of, who had 35 at bats in the regular season, made his debut at the end of August.
Tall shortstop.
Very tall shortstop. Hit very well in his limited time. Was called on to pinch hit for Mauricio Dubon. In a huge spot in his first ever postseason appearance, right? I mean, it wasn't even a given he was going to be on the roster. It seems like they picked him over having Will Smith, a lefty on their bullpen roster. Okay, great. Great at bat, right? Fouls off of a couple pitches and works. It ended up being a hit by pitch, but it was essentially a walk, right? And that is huge, right? Okay, now we go to Altuve. And now I'm already just, you know, come on. I mean, at this point, it's bad enough. Strikes out Altuve. Okay, great. Now we have another rookie coming up, the rookie you have heard of, Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena dumps one into center field. Okay, now, here we get to our first decision of the evening. It's first and second. It's two outs. Paul Sewald clearly doesn't totally have it, and as he struggled in Toronto, okay. What are our options here? Okay, we could go to Matt Boyd, who's a real lefty in the bullpen. We could go to George Kirby. We could go to Eric Swanson, who's also struggled down the stretch, right? Or apparently we can go to Robbie Ray. So, Jake, give me your take on the decision to put in Robert Ray.
Wrong decision. Okay, for a couple of reasons. Had Robbie Ray gone out in Toronto, or as they call it, Trana, and carved through the Blue Jays lineup and looked dominant along the way, maybe this makes a little bit of sense, right? This has happened before. Guys do this in the postseason all the time. They come back and they relieve when they're usually starters. Now, what bugs me is that what's the point of carrying Matt Boyd, right, if you're not going to use him in this spot? What's the point of carrying Swanson, who has been, correct me if I'm wrong, phenomenal for months now, if you're not going to use him in that spot? To me, this is something that managers do too often in the postseason. They go out of what got them there. We saw this happen to Ollie Marmol in the wild card round. We saw this happen to Buck in the wild card round when he went to Diaz in kind of an odd spot that didn't end up biting him in the butt. And then who am I forgetting? It happened one more time in the wild card round with the Guardians.
Well, I just want to say
the other series.
We saw George Kirby.
Oh, with the Blue Jays. Yep. They went to Romano too early. So this happens. Like, managers do this, and Robbie Ray is not comfortable pitching in that situation. And now you don't know that until he tries it. And I understand pitching is still pitching, right? But at the same time, Robbie Ray does not exactly move like a guy who's comfortable pitching out of the bullpen if he's just going to be throwing fastballs down the middle, right? For him to be good, those things need to move. They need to have hop. They need to have some spice on them. And we're about to get to this. They did not.
No.
My number one option would have been to keep Sewald in there. My second option would have been to go to Swanson, then Boyd, then Ray.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so they go to Robbie Ray, and I totally agree with everything you just said. He has only had one relief appearance in the last however many years, and it's not like he was throwing great recently anyway. But to your point, right, like it was so funny to see the Mariners in their, you know, first postseason, how long, and, you know, they've mapped these out, right? And Service said after the game, like, yes, it's not like I suddenly came up with this idea when Alvarez stepped to the plate. Like, I realized this was a possibility. But thinking, yes, this is what we do. We're in the postseason now. We just go back to our starters. I mean, especially for a team that has had success in the bullpen this year, it was disappointing to see. Okay. Why are we pitching to Yordan Alvarez in the first place? Here's the calculus, right?
You don't want to put the tying run on second. A single ties the game.
Yes.
That I understand.
However, if you're going to put the tying run on second, the tying run is better than the winning run, who is Yordan Alvarez at the plate. Now, if you put him on first, he is either going to be pinch run for or is slow Yordan Alvarez, probably not scoring and winning the game, right? Seawald against Bregman, if you're going to keep Seawald in, is probably a more favorable matchup than anybody against Yordan Alvarez, right? And so I think that is the other part that is just very difficult. Now, that's a much more interesting debate, right? Load the bases.
I would have left him. I would have pitched Alvarez in that spot. I don't have a huge problem with that. Putting the tie and run on second is never ideal because, like, a bloop can tie the game, right? Yeah. Like, something weird can tie the game, whereas Alvarez, like, he has to hit a ball hard. And at the same time, this is our next question. I know, yeah, he ends up doing that. He does it all the time. But our next question that you mentioned is the pitches that were thrown to him. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. If you are going to pitch to Yordan Alvarez, you cannot give him anything to hit until he gets to, like, a 2-0, 3-1 count. That's the biggest crime here. And is people that Robbie Ray leaned back and just hucked it down the dick.
And he said, oh, I, you know, and people pointed out, oh, Yordan is actually worse against sinkers then breaking stuff, whatever. And Ray said after the game, like, I was just trying to get in and I didn't. And again, that goes back to the thing we just said before. This is not a comfortable position for Robbie Ray, no matter how much you're paying him and how much status he has and how many awards he has. It's just not, right? And so that's where you can't be surprised when he misses his spot by a lethal amount. And then
my man is not
117.
He's not trying to get David Hensley out either. That's the other thing. He's trying to get Yordan Alvarez out. And that's an unfair situation to put Ray in. I'm sure Ray wants the ball in that spot. That's great. But just, you know, I want $1 million. Like, it's midnight here at Yankee Stadium. I'm hungry and I want a cheeseburger, but I don't have it either. And Robbie Ray should not have been put in that spot. Okay. Yordan makes contact and you know right away. I mean, you know right away. How are you doing?
So some people pointed out when they responded to my video, you know, how did you not scream? How did you, we were so calm? And you could
you're
tell
not a screamer.
I was, that's true, right? That's just not really me. But also, like, so much of this, and if you're an Astros fan thinking about this, it's just laughing at me. It's like, so much of this and preparation for this, as you know, Jake, is my reverence for Yordan Alvarez, which stretches back many years, you know? Like, not that I'm saying I was, like, first to know he was good, but, like, I have been screaming to the to everybody, he might be the best hitter in the world, right? And I know there's someone that hit 62 home runs for the Yankees, but, like, we're not just talking about, oh, he's a good hitter, let's pitch around him. Like, he's that good, and he has done it in October. We have watched him do it time and time and time again, right? And so that's the part where I was, that's why I started recording, I'm like, this could go as horribly as I could imagine. Now, 117 to the second deck. I mean, you know, you know, he could have hit a more normal home run that didn't, you know, stab me in the stomach. But I was fairly prepared for something like that to happen. And that is why I simply slumped and did not scream in shock.
Yordan looked genuinely surprised that he got such a bad pitch.
Well, he got the same pitch the pitch before and he fouled it back.
Right. Right. He was like, you want to do that again? Oh, okay. Yeah. Bye.
So let's zoom out now.
Let me make this point to you, Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
As someone who has experienced crushing postseason defeat before.
Right. Well, this is the thing. This is my first thought, right? Was like, what is a home run that has been this devastating? And you've lived it.
I think it's probably the closest
Yeah,
in recent memory.
100%. 100%, right? Not that there haven't been other walk-off home runs, but when you compare a pitching decision that leads to something like this, XYZ, right?
Correct. Just to be clear, we're talking about the 2016 AL wildcard game, the Edwin Encarnacio home run off of Ubaldo Jimenez. Now, that was a little different, right? Because no more baseball for the Baltimore Orioles.
Exactly. Yep, and I'm going to get to that. Yep.
And the Mariners do get to play a baseball game tomorrow.
Nope, not tomorrow. Thursday. They have to sit Thursday, on this a little bit longer.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. But it is always better to have loved and literally lost than it is to have never loved at all. And the gut, that feeling in your gut, that helplessness, the idea that like you don't know what to do with your hands, you like go to take a piss or like pour yourself a glass of water and your mind goes blank. And then you just like remember that Robbie Ray threw that pitch and you're like, why didn't he just not do that? That permeates everything you do for like an hour. But yes. Then you remember that it is better to be sad than bored. It is better to have your heart ripped out ruthlessly from your throat than to be sitting on your hands when the weather gets cold. And Jordan, for the first time in your life, you experienced postseason heartbreak. And I am genuinely happy for you, saddened for you. And I think that it is maybe the last feeling, besides winning a World Series, that you have experienced as a fan, mm-hmm. right? And now I feel like your resume is complete.
Which the thing about that is it's been three games, right? Like this is why I am, to your point, like I am also so appreciative of this insane pain that I felt for 30 minutes following this home run. It's like they finally got there. Again, I've only been a Mariners fan for 10 years. It's not the long drop, blah, blah, blah. But like, I've been looking forward to this. And they could have bowed out in two normal, boring losses, right? They could have had two normal, boring wins. And I was just, you know, cheesing, right? That first Luis Castillo game, I was chilling. And I was on top of the world. I was like, oh my God, the Mariners can win the World Series. They've got this Luis Castillo and they can do blah, 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 blah. Then the unbelievable game that was game two in Toronto. And then literally the mirror image, right? How funny is that? That in Toronto, they go Robbie Ray disaster, Paul Sewald disaster, come back and win. And then tonight, they go amazing game for the whole time. And then Paul Sewald disaster, Robbie Ray disaster, and they lose.
You're getting a taste of it all. And I think that's important. It is like the tasting menu of postseason experience, Jordan. 100%. And you've been thrown right into it right away. And I am... How are you right now? Like, I got messages from people being like, how's Jordan? Which is, first of all, is very funny because obviously sad. Like, how's Jordan? Oh, he's great. But, like, he's not going to jump off a bridge or drown himself in bourbon. Like, he's a big boy and he is going to be okay. Now, the funniest part of this is that you then had to write about the game, yes. which you had agreed to do at Fox Sports before it started. And I was like, are you sure? And you were like, yeah, I'll do it. So,
of
course. And you had to write the whole gamer from scratch because it had been ripped up moments ago by Yordan Alvarez.
That is very correct. But again, hey, it's all part of it. Like you said, I'm still glad that they will continue on and they will play on Thursday and Luis Castillo gives them a chance to, I guess, split somehow in this series. And that would be amazing. But, you know, we'll get to that when we get there. The last thing about this series, and then we'll move on to Phillies Braves, is just like, it is so amazing, right? This is the difference between what you experienced and is like, this isn't the end, right? And the fact that they can experience this game in game one, and maybe this is it, this is the death knell, they can't come back from it. But maybe they can. And like, that is so funny that they can, you know, that they're going to go out there with Luis Castillo on Thursday and have a decent chance to win. Because if the offense keeps swinging it, like again, they played an amazing baseball game for 93% right. of the time. And so like, there is good stuff to come away from it. It's just, hey man, this sport
in a weird way, you feel better right now than you would if they had simply lost a regular game. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's, oh, if the offense comes out tomorrow and Castillo should dominate, like, you still leave with a split and you still feel good about that.
Yeah, but right? it's really wild. So anyway, that was a game that happened. And yeah, it's also just so funny, right? Like, it happens and I walk downstairs and my lovely fiance Bailey sitting on the couch, and she's a baseball fan too, but she, you know, she had a busy day at work and she's, you know, just, she doesn't care right now. And I'm just gonna walk down and like, part of me wants to go down and just like start freaking out, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I just kind of stood there and I was just like, hey, what's up? Like, you doing all right? Because I was like, it was nice to just like be like, oh, right, we're all doing this silly thing when we're locked in and we're watching, we're in our own universe. And then the rest of the world is just going about their business. So it was a nice little humbling moment to step back. And then eventually I did have to write about it, which was very funny. All right.
As my girlfriend said during the entire Aaron Judge home run chase, did the guy do the thing?
Exactly. In this case, it was quite the opposite. Anyway, all right, let's move on to Phillies and Braves, which if you look at the final score, I mean, this was in some ways sort of kind of maybe heading to some kind of a similar ending, but not quite, as the Phillies prevail 7-6 in a very strange baseball game. Jake, tell me about this one.
Max Fried, a man who is as reliable as they come, was awful. His worst start in over a year. I believe it was his fewest strikeouts in any outing all season, the fewest innings he had thrown in any outing all season. These two teams played a series, I think, the second to last weekend of the year, and Suarez and Fried actually matched up in a game against one another, a game that Philly won 1-0. Both guys threw really well. It is very obvious from the Philly strategy today that they they learned from that experience. Instead of letting Fried get ahead in the count early with his fastball, then you have to deal with the curve, they were just hopping on heaters early from the jump. So Schwarber and Reese get out really quickly in the first, two outs, right? And then Realmuto, Harper, Castellanos, Bone, single, 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 two run score. Couple of those on first pitch swings. And you're like, oh, weird. Philly didn't have a single two out hit in the entire series against St. Louis. They went 0-16 with two outs, right?
And they won the series anyway.
And they went hit, 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 single, 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 single with two outs in the first. And you're like, oh, something might be up. Then they pile on a couple more in the third. And you're like, this is weird. Fried does not have his best stuff. It's 6-1. Then it's 7-1. Fried ends up getting knocked out in the fourth. The big guy to talk about here, Jordan, Nick Castellanos, who all season long had turned himself into public enemy number one of greater Philadelphia because he was poo-poo and had gotten a 5-year $100 million contract, 95 OPS plus, and bad defense to boot. He goes 3-for-3 in his first three at-bats and three RBI, two of which were on the first pitch, two of which were with two outs. What?
Well, Castellanos is exactly the kind of guy, right, that can just suddenly turn it on. I mean, his track record is too long to where you think a three-hit game is impossible, but obviously the results this season have been extremely underwhelming. And then we'll get to his, you know, play at the end of the game, which I think you made a great point about on Twitter. But so then the Braves are poking back into it. Brogdon, so no bueno.
The thing here to talk about Ranger Suarez, the Phillies pitcher, was honestly just as teetery and tottery as Fried was, except that he was able to escape two bases loaded jams, one in the first, one in the third. And so even though he was very shaky and left, I don't think he made it through three. Yeah, he only got
didn't make it through third. Four. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Didn't make it through four. Like, he was able to limit the runs. He only allowed one earned run in 3 1/3, whereas Fried allowed four. That was kind of the difference in the ball game. Philly's bullpen having to pick up, what is that, doing the math, that's four, that's a lot of outs. So I guess that's 17 outs that a meh bullpen was tasked to get. And they got exactly that. The Braves chipped away, got some against Connor Brogdon. Brad Hand came in and was good. Sir Anthony Dominguez threw two innings and was absolutely dominant. But heading into the ninth, Jordan, it is 7-3. Phillies hanging on. Two runners get on against Zach Eflin, who was...
Here comes Zach Eflin, the closer. Sure.
The closer, who had not closed at all year. Three-run home run. Matt Olson. Atlanta's going crazy. Truist is going wild. It's like, here we go again. Phillies bullpen. It did. You're right. It felt like the Mariners-Astros game. We just hadn't seen it yet. But somehow, some way, Eflin buckles down and gets William Contreras and gets Travis d'Arnaud. And the Phillies escape Atlanta with a 7-6 win.
Contreras with the ball to Castellanos and Wright.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
And you made the point on Twitter that catches, good defensive plays made by bad defenders are often better highlights than those made by our Gold Glovers. And I think this is so true. Now, it doesn't always look as graceful, but you do have that feeling of, oh my God, he did that, right? Instead of, oh my God, what a play, you say, oh my God, how did he do it?
If there's a ball hit into the gap between like 2016 and 2021 in Tampa, you're like, oh, Kevin Kiermaier's got it, right? You assume an out. Now, maybe that's not fair, right? Because spectacular defenders should be able to wow us, but you assume they're going to catch it. Any ball ever hit to anywhere near Nick Castellanos, whether even it's right at him, I'm like, oh, that's not going to be caught, right? And especially ones that are looping in front of him. And so when he took off running, I'm like, because if he misses it, it's a triple.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have the tying run on third.
Yeah. And yeah, there was a similar, when I was in Seattle, I think it was the Sunday game. There was a similar play, not as high stakes, but Jesse Winker, who's just been horrific in left the whole season and is in a similar bucket as Castellanos, former Reds teammate, where it's like only athletic in the box and nowhere else. And he made like a jumping grab at the wall to like, you know, stop a run. And everyone went crazy because it was like, how did he just do that? So I totally agree with that point. And then that caps off an incredible game by Castellanos at the perfect time for them.
It has the same kind of energy as like a lineman touchdown. It's like, wow, I can't believe this unathletic gentleman made such a wonderful play. So that means Philly has taken one of the two games in Atlanta, and then they have Zach Wheeler going tomorrow against Kyle Wright, who is magically and suddenly good. I all of a sudden really like Philly's chances to take this series. Jordan, anything else on this before we take a quick break?
No, I think it is looking pretty good, and they almost Phillied it, but they made it happen, so good for them. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Buck O'Neill dedicated his life to teaching us about the heroes of the Negro Leagues and demonstrating that you could get further in life with love than you could with hate. Now is our opportunity to say thank you to this legendary man. Join the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum as we celebrate Buck's long overdue induction into the National Baseball Hall of Fame by supporting our Thanks a Million Buck campaign. It's an effort to raise at least $1 million by fans donating a buck or more in support of the NLBM. Remember, every buck counts. To donate, visit thanksamillionbuck.com.
We're back here on Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Now, I am in the Bronx, and I'm not here by accident. I came here on purpose, as I do very often, to see the Yankees. Woohoo! Wow. Everyone knows the Yankees.
That's great. So, Jake, after Yordan Alvarez hit a ball to space, I said, I'm never watching baseball ever again. So I didn't watch any of the Guardians-Yankees game, and I'm not joking. So because of that, and because you are still at Yankee Stadium, I'm going to let you carry this conversation.
So it all starts with me taking in the Yordan Alvarez home run, a good buddy of mine. Was at the game tonight, and so I went to his seats to say hello. And up there, I did not have access to a television or a way to watch the end of the Astros game. So as I ate my overpriced Benihana Poke Bowl from Section 421, I followed the end of the Mariners game on game day, where there were very much in play, no outs.
AKA in play runs.
In play, no more baseball going on here. And so I saw the blue dot and I was like, how many runs? And then it was all of the runs. Yeah. From that point, I journeyed down to the press box where I took in what was a interesting baseball game for a little bit and then slowly wasn't. Cleveland takes a 1-0 lead early on a pretty shocking Stephen Kwan solo shot off of Gerrit Cole. Kwan, famously very little power, famously tons of contact ability. Cole famously gives up a lot of bombs, but this felt like the universe laughing and being like, oh, how many bombs does Gerrit Cole give up? This many bombs. Here's a Stephen Kwan one into the first row. You saw that highlight.
I did. And I mean, it was, you know, I think a 2-0 fastball right down the middle, which Stephen Kwan is not going to miss. But how far he's going to hit it is always something of a question. But that was very cool to see. And then, oh, my goodness, it's like, here we go. You know, Stephen Kwan and Quantrill was throwing pretty well at that point. But then Mr. Bader, I believe, struck back in the bottom of the third.
That was key because something that happens here at Yankee Stadium, and it happens at Citi Field too and in some of these bigger markets, when a team in the postseason at home goes down early, and you can feel the collective clenching of the New York butthole, Jordan. You can feel the unease, the tension, the what if we lose start to permeate around the crowd. And the longer that that thought is allowed to exist, the more likely it is, and this is not true because it's not facts, it's just vibes, but the more likely it is that the team on the field loses, the worse the vibes get in the crowd. You know that feeling?
Yeah.
It's a coastal elite thing, Jordan. It only happens here in New York.
It does feel that way because I think the Astros fans were chilling when they were down 4-0.
Correct. And Harrison Bader immediately assuaged any of those concerns with a game time blast to left off of Quantrill. And then the game journeyed 1-1. Biggest play of the game. Key moment of the game. We'll start with that. Josh Donaldson hits a ball to right field, bounces off the top of the wall. He's like walking to first base. Not a home run. He gets tagged out. Looks like a total doofus. Really delightful for the fellow Josh Donaldson dislikers here on planet Earth. Next hitter, I believe, was, I don't have my scorebook in front of me.
It was IKF.
IKF lines one down the right field line for what looks like a single, but SpongeBob himself, Oscar Gonzalez, bungles it. IKF gets to third. Next hitter, sac flies him in. And that was the difference. The Yankees padded on a couple more to make it 4-1. Cole was really good. And then the Yankees bullpen a couple times looked like it was about to fall apart, held together with Band-Aids and duct tape. They endured. And the Yankees win it 4-1.
Well, and we should really just take a moment to talk about this too, because this did not show up in our preview because we did not know that Scott Efros needed Tommy John surgery when we previewed this series.
Jordan, I am no longer the only sidearming Jew in New York City who has required Tommy John surgery.
Wow.
I now have company.
You and Scott are really, really going to be bonding over that for years to come. But yeah, that's a huge blow, right? I mean, he was one of the guys we were penciling in as someone we can rely on. And now he's gone and we know Chapman's gone. And so it's really going to be Miguel Castro. But tonight it was Loaiza and Wandy Peralta and Clay Holmes.
And this is the thing about the current Yankees bullpen that I really want to emphasize. A lot has been made, and fairly so, of how depleted they are, right? Because if you look at the IL, you're like, that's a whole bullpen. King, Ridings, Marinaccio, Britton, Green. That's like
Chapman.
A whole bullpen. That's like better than most teams' bullpen. But the guys who are left behind are like still really good. Wandy Peralta, ERA under 3, right? Clay Holmes was the best closer in baseball for 4 months, right? There are real human beings out there who can get real outs. Jonathan Loaisiga had an ERA on, I think it was like 2-3 all of last season. And then he got hurt and was bad in the first half and was 2-5 all the way down the stretch. The Yankees, like, eighth and ninth options are still really good. And that's a credit to Cashman for putting this team together and the staff here, the pitching coaches, for making sure that those guys are ready to go. Because tonight they showed up and they got the last 8 outs of the game and the Yankees won. There were a couple moments of doubt. Like, it was kind of wonderfully poetic how it went down. Like, Loaiza comes in, immediately gives up a hit. People get nervous. Next batter, double play. Ooh. Next inning, Peralta comes in, gives up a hit. Next batter, double play. Right. Everyone settles down. Clay Holmes comes in the ninth with one out, hits the first batter he gets. People get nervous, gets the next 2 outs to end the game. So there were just signs of weakness in the Yankees bullpen, but it is important to remember that their best relievers are actually really good. And the fact that there's an off day tomorrow does help the Yankees because they can rest those 3 dudes and just bring them back in game 2 on Thursday, where if game 2 was tomorrow, they might not have been able to do that. So that's really all you need to know here. Gerrit Cole in the press conference was very thoughtful, is the word I would use, and said, today was a good day. It was my dad's birthday. Jordan, what do you think Gerrit Cole got his dad for his birthday?
A lot of options when you're making that much money. So pretty hard to pin that down.
What do you get your dad when you make that much money? Like, I got my dad like a bike jersey or something, you know, like, do you
right.
get your dad like a house? Do you
right.
get him?
You just like any car. But again, it's like, that's the other thing when you're buying things that are that big.
Right.
Again, he's not going to complain, but there's got to be some level of practicality. It's not just like, here's a boat. Okay. What am I going to do
right.
with this?
What's the perfect gift when you're outlandishly rich, but you don't want to look like a jerk, but you still love your dad. Because, like, if he gets his dad a card, it's like, I know how much you make. All I get is a card. But if you buy him, like, a boat, like you said, that's also kind of gaudy. So, you know what I would do? I would get him, like, a really nice bottle of booze.
Really? Right. Just max out the most expensive bottle you can find. A great answer. You're a journalist. Why don't you go ask Eric Cole tomorrow or Thursday?
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, I think you should
do that. I'll report back.
Last thing on this series before we get to our final series is, again, I didn't watch this game because I'm never watching baseball again. But I'm looking at the box score, and this isn't, again, like, this is because you were there. You had the feel of the game, and I think you described the vibe of it generally well. And I'm not trying to hit on the Yankees, but it is interesting to look at the box score and see that Cleveland outhit the Yankees barely, 6-5. But it's not like the Yankees offense was, we had some unlikely heroes, and, Judge 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts. And so, that's just something I'm certainly curious about if I do choose to watch baseball again. Come Thursday, is will the Yankees hitters step up? And look, Trevor Stephens really good, but they didn't exactly face the cream of the crop from Cleveland just yet, right? So that's something that I take note of just looking at the box score.
I mean, the runs came on solo shot from Bader, that flub by Gonzalez that was a Trevino sack fly, and then a 2-run homer from Rizzo after Judge walked.
And as we said, like, that's clearly enough. It's not like the Guardians are going to outslug
them. That's the thing. And this is the thing. The home run is key. A-Rod can go on broadcast all he wants to talk about stringing hits together. But the Guardians lost this game with more hits than the Yankees did because the Yankees are able to put the ball over the fence repeatedly. And Cleveland cannot. They cannot. We know that about them. Yes, here's a funny thing. Someone tweeted this. They have scored all their runs this October on homers, Cleveland has so far, which does not tell you
all four really, of them.
All four of their runs have been on homers, okay? Which is great, duh, but honestly emphasizes the point of how key homers are in the postseason, even for a team like Cleveland. So maybe they can get one. I was hoping for like a Josh Naylor moment off of Cole. I thought he was kind of the perfect guy to get him. Cole sequenced him really well all night, got him chasing the knuckle curve in his first at-bat. Naylor didn't look totally comfortable, ended up going 0-for-4 on the night. Game two... I do like Cleveland's chances behind Bieber, but this isn't rocket science. They need to score more than a run. They need to. They had an opportunity tonight with the bases loaded and just one out, and Cole was able to wriggle out of it without allowing an extra run in that spot.
And I love the Biebs, and I trust him big time, but Cortez, as a lefty, is not necessarily who some of Cleveland's best hitters are going to want to be seeing. So again, offense is going to be a struggle for them, even in games that they win. So
Naylor's OPS against lefties this year was 344 points lower than his OPS against righties.
Yeah, and then Jimenez doesn't have a big splits, but Ramirez is amazing. But even Kwan, right, and Brennan, whatever. It's just it's a little tough. So and Naylor's a big part of the offense. So whatever the offense is, I guess.
Last point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Watching this game. There, you couldn't help but notice that Cleveland could really use a big bopper in the middle of their order. You know what I mean? And I got to thinking, who's on the free agent market this year? And then I glanced out to right field and I was like, Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge would be a great Guardian. Wouldn't he be perfect in this lineup? That's what I kept thinking to myself.
Sorry to go backwards here, but I was thinking about that with Tampa, and then I remembered that they made a legitimate run at Freddie Freeman. You know? Yeah. Like that is, and Cleveland certainly did not do that. So I'm not giving them too much credit, but that just made me think of that.
San Francisco, where's your disco? This is Scott Braun from Baseball Legends Lounge, a SiriusXM podcast downloaded today to hear our in-depth conversation with Giants legend Will Clark.
And I turned and Chili Davis was on my left-hand side. He was one of my veterans. And I go, Chili, he's going to drill me next time up. He goes, oh, hell yeah.
Download Baseball Legends Lounge right now on the SXM app, included with all of our trials and popular plans, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, now it is time to talk about Dodgers Padres. If the audio sounds a little different, my voice is a little scratchier, there aren't stadium workers cleaning up peanut shells in the background, that's because we have fast-forwarded about 8 hours in the world, and I'm no longer at Yankee Stadium. It is now morning, and I'm in my apartment because that is how West Coast baseball influences our lives. Jordan, let's break down Dodgers Padres.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, as we were as your time at Yankee Stadium was kind of running out, and you wanted to go home and get some sleep like a normal person, totally reasonable request. We were like, the Dodgers are probably going to hang on. Do we really have to wait for them to finish in case the Padres have a crazy comeback like the Astros? But when it's Dodgers Padres, you usually know how the game is going to end. And when you pull up the box score, it just looks like a classic, frustrating Dodgers victory. not a blowout, but one where they were basically generally in control for the entire game. It was Julio Urias against Mike Clevinger. I would say, honestly, this is kind of a game that is pretty similar to the Yankees-Guardians game, where the Padres were forced to not use their best pitcher, and the Dodgers were able to use one of their best pitchers, and that had them on the back foot the whole time. And Mike Clevinger is worse than Cal Quantrill, even though they were traded for each other, right? Yes. So that's that connection. And Mike Clevinger is just not all that good anymore. And the Dodgers are one of the best lineups we've ever seen. So that's a bad recipe for winning game one of a postseason series.
This one went about as exactly how you would have thought with Clevinger on the mound. I mean, he went 2 2/3, allowed 4 runs, 4 earned runs, 5 runs total, 6 hits, walked 2 guys, only struck out 3. He just wasn't good enough. He was a pitcher going up against a lineup that was light years better than him, and it just showed right away. Turner went yard on the second batter of the game. Dodgers put up 5 runs early. You know, one of those was on a Will Myers error. One of those was on like a Max Muncy dribbler through the shift. But another one of those was on a Gavin Lux line drive double down the line where Clevinger probably should have been out of the game. Now, credit where credit is due. The San Diego Padres bullpen, who...
Yes, I was going to mention this.
We have been throwing tomato at, doubting their abilities. Scoreless last night. Steven Wilson, Pierce Johnson, Tim Hill, Nick Martinez. What a gaggle of boring names that is. But they threw, quick maths, 5 1/3 innings without allowing a run, striking out, quick maths, 7 guys. That's an impressive thing. And a lot, this is what's the most demoralizing, I think, from last night's game for Padres fans, is that a lot went right. Urias was not his best self. He was a little shaky. The Padres knocked him around a little bit. They got runners in scoring position, right? The San Diego bullpen came through and held the game together. But that's what happens when you play the Dodgers. You can't just play a good game. You got to play your best game and hope they play a bad game. And that's why the margin for error is so slim. Because the Dodgers bullpen and their gaggle of who the fuck are these guys also threw a scoreless situation last night between Evan Phillips, Alex Vesia, Brusdar Graterol, and I will try to fix you, Chris Martin.
Closer, Chris Martin, right? So Craig Kimbrel being left off the roster was one of the biggest talking points of the Dodgers' postseason roster decisions, and it doesn't matter. Their whole pitching staff is tremendous, but you're totally right, right? You know, Padres having 5+ scoreless, hitless innings against the Dodgers is very impressive, and I guess, you know, maybe a good sign, but the Dodgers, you know, haven't played in a week, and they are now going to get kind of cruising here. And it's a 5-game series. The Dodgers only have to win 2 more. And I don't know if you saw, but they won 111 of these baseball games in the regular season. So it probably won't be too difficult for them to win another. But let's just turn ahead to today. I mean, Darvish, Kershaw, now we're rolling here, right? Now we're really talking.
Yeah. And if the Padres want to try and steal one, they're going to need Juan Soto to do something. And he did kind of do something in that third game against the Mets by kind of putting it out of reach with that single against Eddie D. But he's got to have a moment for the Padres to do it. If they're going to win, they need the best players on their team to do stuff. Last night, that didn't really happen. Profar, Soto, Machado, Drury, 1 hit between the two in the top 4 spots of the order.
Yeah.
Quick question. If the Padres bullpen threw a no-hitter, do they get to celebrate themselves?
Oh, that's funny, right? If like say Mike Clevenger got zero outs, you know, but allowed five runs, and then the Padres bullpen throws a no hitter in a loss. Yeah, can you celebrate that? I think, against the Dodgers for sure.
I think you get to have a beer for sure. That's a beer.
You're at least feeling pretty good. But yeah, I mean, if, you know, and you're looking at the game log, top of the sixth, Soto walk, Machado single to lead off, first and second, nobody out against Evan Phillips, who started the inning. Bell pinch hits, strikeout, Will Myers double play, and then, you know, that's the killer.
And Myers hit it really hard. It was just right at second baseman, and they turned two. Yeah. So yeah, this is gonna maybe go how we think. Darvish has a chance to make this a ball game. Do I think the Dodgers will win anyway? Yes, I do. Because like Jordan said, they won 111 games.
Mm-hmm. But again, you know, even with the Padres playing pretty well, when you compare it to the devastation of the Mariners game one loss, where you go in and you say, wow, the Astros are amazing, they're way better. But now for the first seven innings, it's like, oh my God, like the Mariners are hanging with them. Like they are playing up to their standard. You know, it didn't feel like the Padres were playing up to the Dodgers standard. The Dodgers were just like kind of relaxing and winning. And then, you know, the devastation. So I bring that up because let's finish out this podcast episode so that people can listen to it. Anything else on Padres-Dodgers before we say goodbye here? All right. So as Jake mentioned, we fast-forwarded 7 hours, which means I had to go to sleep and, you know, lie in bed and look at the ceiling and picture Yordan Alvarez hitting a ball to the moon 500 times. And I just wanted to add a couple other thoughts before we say goodbye about this moment. Wow. Because
you're literally slept on it.
I literally said I had to. I had no choice. I was not just going to wait. And then you really would have heard quite a delusional version of me this morning. But the first thing to point out is what I think people who were not as emotionally distraught were able to immediately react to in the moment, which is our good friend Foolish Baseball, who tweeted in the mere minutes after, because he had an inkling. This is the kind of thing that I love to think about when I'm not extremely emotionally invested, which is that the Yordan Alvarez walk-off home run had the highest win probability added of any play in postseason history, passing Kirk Gibson's walk-off in 1988, which... And the top of this list is just an incredible list. And just so we don't have to get too you know, in the weeds here, but win probability, it's basically how low is the win probability at the moment of that plate appearance ending for a game? And what is it when the plate appearance is over? And that's what that was, right? Down two outs in the ninth against what is a good team and whatever. There it is. And the fact that it was the first walk-off home run down by multiple runs in the postseason ever is incredible. Is honestly like borderline impossible to believe.
There are so few postseason games. Like we really don't think
that's
about
true.
It, right?
That's a good point.
The sample size is comically small, even now when we have 85 teams that get to play in October. It's still very few games generally. That win probability chart looked like a cliff that you could jump off of, Jordan, right there at the end.
Well, and also, again, we've seen those with comebacks. We just saw it in the one last week with the Mariners. But normally, again, comebacks are comebacks over time, and the win probability is being chipped away at, even if it's all in the eighth and ninth inning. But for the last batter, I mean, you just don't see charts like that. And that's what this was. And this list that you can see Foolish tweet out, I mean, it's great, right? Gibson, you got the Brett Phillips hit. Is in the top five. You've got, of course, Pujols off Lidge. You know, they're not all necessarily walk-offs, but they are all moments that you remember. And adding to the point that you said earlier about, like, to experience all of that, to experience that kind of moment that quickly is just remarkable. And then the last thing is just, like, everyone is crushing Robbie Ray, and I get it, but truly... I mean, what a ridiculous ask of him. And I think the thing that I'm most mad about, if I was a super angry person, which fortunately I am not, but a lot of people online are, is treating Yordan Alvarez like he's some sort of platoon advantage. and service being like, yeah, you know, we planned this opportunity to go to our guy for a lefty spot. Like, dude, it's Yordan. Like, he's got 1,000 OPS against lefties. He has a higher batting average against lefties. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, honestly, you should just be putting your best pitcher on the mound, and that isn't Robbie Ray in that spot. And so that's the part that I am most irked by that I wanted to say, and hating on Robbie Ray to this degree feels pretty ridiculous.
But there are certainly some things one could critique Robbie Ray for.
Yes. Yes. Including his pitching in a lot of cases.
This is not it.
Yes.
I would say that his outing in Toronto had a lot more issues from like he was just tossed into the fire and he doesn't know how to do that job. If I was asked to edit and produce this podcast, it would not be good. Now, that doesn't mean Yordan Alvarez would come in and embarrass me in front of 40,000 people, but I would still fail, right? Because it's not a role that I am skilled at or familiar with. And Robbie Ray went out there, and every pitcher, because of toxic masculinity, is going to want the baseball in that spot. But it honestly, it takes a bigger man, Jordan Schusterman, to say, maybe you should put in Eric Swanson.
Exactly. Well said. On that note, this is the end of this podcast. We will be back later this week for another pod, fourth pod of the week.
We don't stop.
We told you guys we'd be bringing the noise, and we hope you appreciate it. If you would like to email us with your distraught Mariners thoughts, by the way, we got an incredible Mets email that we will try to get to at some point because it was so good.
We'll sit on that and read it when DeGrom signs with the Brewers.
Okay, we'll save on that. So you know who you are if you're listening. It was a fantastic email. But baseballbarbicast, BARBcast at gmail.com.
And thank let me you. Say, yeah. I you know, I am very much going to these games now. I will be at the Yankees-Guardians workout today at Yankee Stadium. I am in all the press conferences. If you, Barbicast listeners, have actual, meaningful, thoughtful questions for people on these teams, send them in and I might ask them. Okay. Yeah. And I'll let you know how it goes. Now, if your question is Terry Francona, what it do, baby? I'm not going to ask that. But
that's not clearing the bar that you're setting here.
But I'm giving an opportunity. I am willing to crowdsource my access to it.
Well, as we said earlier, you got to find out what Gerrit Cole got his dad for his birthday.
Okay. That'll be my job today. I'll take care of that today. Maybe should I bring the mic and record it for the pod?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it might, if it's in a press, it depends if it's in a presser or not, right? But but go right ahead. But that also reminded me, we did not get to talk about the incredible Gerrit Cole quotes before the game in our friend Lindsay Adler's article, which let me tell you, the Angels were just getting all kinds of strays yesterday with the Gerrit Cole talking about how he could be flipping burgers and relaxing in October instead of pitching for the Yankees if he had signed with the Angels, combined with everyone being like, Jared Kelenic has more postseason hits than Mike Trout. It was a rough day for the Angels franchise.
Not to get too morbid, but Eric Kay going to prison for 22 years.
That too. It was not a good day for the Angels, and they have not played baseball for a week. All right. That's it. That's the end of this podcast. And we're done. We'll see you later this week. Exact time, TBD.
Did you say Yordan?
Yordan? Yordan has made Jordan very sad. But also, I love Yordan so much. I can't help it. As painful as it was, I'm glad it wasn't Aledmys Diaz.
SiriusXM Podcasts.